There were so many pictures on, I just picked one. I knew nothing about it. But I didn't care and the angels didn't say anything either, so I assumed everything was okay. I have to laugh at that now. It was a beautiful summer evening and O'Connell Bridge looked wonderful in the evening light, with its lamps and big flower pots. Joe was a few minutes late, and as I stood there I watched what was going on around me. There was a woman and child sitting begging from the many passers-by rushing home after their day's work. There was a woman selling roses, but no one seemed to have the time to stop and buy. I could tell from the colors of the energy around the people what kind of humor they were in, if they were in a hurry or full of excitement. Joe came from the opposite direction and tapped me on the shoulder. I jumped and he laughed as I turned around. I was so happy to see him. He took my hand and we went straight to the cinema. The film I had chosen was called The Virgin and the Gypsy. The cinema was packed, lots of people were going to see this film, so we had to sit quite near the front. About 10 minutes into the film, I started squirming in my seat. This was not a film I wanted to see, certainly not with Joe on our first date. The sex scenes were very explicit, I was shocked. This kind of film was not common in Ireland at that time, back in the 70s. Perhaps that's why there were so many people there. After a few minutes more, I told Joe I wanted to leave. We did, and Joe didn't mind at all. I think he felt as uncomfortable as I did. We walked away from the cinema up O'Connell Street towards Nelson's Pillar. It was such a beautiful evening that I was glad to be out of the cinema. Strolling hand in hand with Joe was a much nicer way of spending our first date. We talked as we went. One of the first things Joe said was that he was glad he hadn't chosen the picture. We both laughed. We walked in front of the GPO, a beautiful greystone building I always loved. We nodded hello to the policeman standing guard outside. I noticed a couple kissing and cuddling, their angels tall and standing very close to them, as if they were helping them to join together. I smiled as we walked past them. Joe put his arm around me, it felt good. I felt safe in his company. We crossed over the road at the traffic lights and went into a restaurant. I had never been in a restaurant at night before. This one was long and narrow with a tiled, marbled floor and the tables were enameled and screwed to the floor with high wooden benches on each side. The backs of these benches were about 4 feet high, so when you sat down you couldn't see who was at any other table. We sat on the wooden benches facing each other. Joe knew by the look on my face that I had never been in a restaurant like this before and he told me that the tables were called booths. Just then, the waitress came over with her pencil and paper and we ordered tea and sandwiches. We talked about our parents. His father was dead. We talked about brothers and sisters. Joe was the youngest of his family and I was the third eldest of mine. Joe asked, "What do you think your DA would say if he knew we were on a date together?" "I am not sure about my DA," I replied, "but I know Mum would more than likely object." So we both agreed we would keep it secret. We left the restaurant and walked the streets for a while, looking at the shop windows, then we walked down along the quays to the bus terminus. Joe lived in a different direction from me and would need to take a different bus. My bus had just pulled in but wasn't due to go for a few minutes, so we were happy to sit on the bus together for a while. "You'd better go for your bus," I told Joe. He got up and said he would be back in a minute. He talked to the bus conductor and then he sat back down beside me and said, "I'm going home with you on the bus. I'll walk you right up to your house." The bus conductor had told him about an unofficial bus that was not on the timetable, which was known as the Ghost Bus. It was a scheduled bus on its way out from Dublin to near my home, but on its return to the garage in the center of Dublin it was not meant to pick up any passengers. It did take passengers, though, and, from then on, whenever we went out Joe always brought me home and then got the ghost bus back into town and walked to his own house. Joe and I didn't tell anyone we were going out with each other. Other girls my age might have shared the secret with a girlfriend, but I had no friends I confided in like that. Anyway, as I said, the angels told me that it was important it was kept a secret. And whenever they tell me this, even now I do as they say. I don't know if Joe told anyone, I never asked, but I don't think so. While we were keeping it secret, and we were very careful about that, Joe's sense of mischief meant he couldn't resist teasing me whenever the opportunity arose. He used to call me Rambo, when I tried to lift a repaired tire into a customer's boot. I'm 5 foot nothing tall, and he would tease me that the miniskirt of my uniform was way too short. He was probably right. Whenever I could, I loved to go fishing with my father. It was something we had done every so often when I was a child, and it continued when I was working in the garage and going out with Joe. I didn't always bring my fishing rod, but I loved the opportunity to be in the quiet by a river, and I liked spending time with my DA. One day, we went fishing in the Wicklow Mountains. We set off early in DA's car and, as always, we brought a picnic with us. We also had a billy can, so that DA could light a fire and make tea. It was a chilly day, we had been fishing for an hour or two and DA had caught a trout, when it started to rain. Nearby, on the riverbank, there was a cluster of trees with an old dilapidated house. DA suggested it would be a nice place to shelter, light a fire and have our tea, we would be out of the cold. DA walked ahead of me, and as we got closer to the trees I noticed there was no light of energy around them and that the place looked very dull. Angel Michael tapped me on the shoulder. "This place may frighten you," he said. "We're going to show you something that is bad. It won't harm you, but it will be aware of you as soon as you walk into that little house. It will respond to you angrily, but it won't touch you." Until then I had been protected from seeing anything evil. "Is it a ghost?" I asked. "No, Lorna, this is a different sort of creature," Michael replied. DA called out to hurry and I looked up. He was some distance ahead and had climbed up onto a bank in front of the house. When I turned around to talk to Michael again, he had disappeared. I ran and caught up with DA. We walked among the trees surrounding the house. Everything around the house seemed dead to me. There were no leaves on the trees, and no grass or flowers growing nearby. The door to the little house was ajar, hanging off its hinges with pieces of board missing. Part of the roof and some of the windows were also gone. DA went in. There was an old broken wooden table and chairs there. To me it felt as cold as ice inside, but DA didn't seem to notice. He went straight to the fireplace. I stood there, just inside the door. I could not move. I just kept saying to myself, "Oh, my God, oh, my angels." I could see a creature near to the fireplace, to the right. It was unlike anything I have seen before or since. It looked like melted wax, about 3 feet long and about chest-wide thick. It was horrible and horrific looking. I couldn't say that it had a mouth or eyes. I knew DA couldn't see or feel anything. He gathered pieces of debris from the floor and piled them into the fireplace and struck a match. The fire exploded immediately. It was a big and noisy explosion and came out into the room. The creature had massive energy. It was just throwing off evil. It was very angry. It had been keeping that place for itself and it didn't want us there. As far as it was concerned, we were trespassing. Just after the fire exploded, one of the chairs moved and went flying across the room, where it hit the far wall and broke. DA jumped and ran for me and the door, grabbing his bag as he went. He pulled me out of the door and we ran as fast as we could through the trees, back down along the banks of the river. We were both scared out of our wits and ran faster than we had ever done before in our lives. DA was a fast runner than me and dragged me behind him. Eventually, out of breath, we slowed down. The rain had stopped and the sun had come out. I felt its warmth on my face. Silently, DA tried to light a campfire. His hands were shaking and he was having difficulty lighting it. I was watching DA, waiting for him to say something. I spoke to the angels without words, and asked them to calm DA down. After some minutes, DA got the fire going, and when the billy can boiled he made tea. We ate our sandwiches in silence. Eventually DA said, in a trembling voice, "I'm sorry for frightening you like that, Lorna. I got a big fright myself. I don't really know what it was, but the only thing I've ever heard of that moves chairs around is a poltergeist, and I've never heard of anything making a fire explode like that. D.A. knew a lot about fires and he was very careful in how he handled them. I think the fire exploding had scared him more than the chair moving. I never said a word, I just continued drinking my tea. I didn't want my D.A. to know how frightened I had been. I had been terrified, even though deep down I knew we would be safe because the angels were minding us. As I sat there by the fire, Michael touched my shoulder, although he didn't appear to me. Michael said D.A. was right. The creature I had seen was a poltergeist. He explained to me that poltergeists are creatures without souls that are created by Satan. Sometimes people invite them in. One way they do this is by experimenting with black magic or Ouija boards, or other things like that. Poltergeists, Michael told me, are sly creatures and they creep in wherever they are given an opportunity, and they can cause enormous destruction. D.A. and I finished lunch in silence, and when we were finished we packed up. D.A. suggested we continued fishing on another stretch of river. I agreed. We both wanted to be a long way from that place. We carried on fishing some miles away, which calmed us both down, and we caught enough fish for dinner. As we enjoyed eating the fish at home that night, we didn't make any mention of what had happened during the day. D.A. and I never spoke of it again. Chapter 8, The Intermediary. One afternoon, while I was washing my hands at the sink in the garage toilets, I looked in the mirror and an angel appeared, just her face at first. She startled me and I jumped. As I stepped back, the mirror on the wall seemed to disappear and the angel came into full view. Her radiant light filled the place. The angel spoke before I did. She called my name. Lorna, call me Angel Elisha. As she said this, she reached out and took my hands in hers. Her hands felt like feathers, and when I looked down at them they resembled feathers, too, but had a completely human shape. I'm referring to Elisha as a she because she appeared to me as a female, but angels are in fact neither male nor female as we are, they are sexless beings. They only appear in the human image to help us to accept them and make us less afraid, and they change their appearance to being female or male so as to make us feel more at ease, or to help us to understand more clearly the message they are giving. I said earlier that the angels told me a little about Elijah while I was writing this book, and at the same time they told me that Elijah is the prophet to whom the prophet Elijah gave his mantle shortly before he ascended to heaven in a chariot. However, Elijah is a man in the Old Testament. Angel Elisha, why are you here? Is something going to change in my life? I asked. Yes, Lorna, she said. You are going to get a new job. I'm going to help your mum meet an old acquaintance of hers and you'll get a new job in a department store in Dublin. I was about to ask Angel Elisha when this was going to happen, when someone knocked on the toilet door. I shouted, I'll be out in a minute. Angel Elisha put her feathered finger to her mouth and disappeared. I was very excited at the idea of getting a new job, even if it meant that I wasn't going to be able to see Joe every day. I felt it would give me a lot more independence from my parents, and it would help them to see that I was capable of doing things on my own. While I was in the garage under my father's protection, they couldn't see this. Some weeks later I was out in the back garden feeding my rabbit when Mum suggested I ask D.A. for a day off. It has been a long time since we've been shopping together, she said. We can browse around the shops and then maybe have lunch in our Knott's department store. I would love that, I said. The next day I asked D.A. about having that Thursday off and he told me that Mum had already asked him, so it was all settled. The angels make me laugh and smile a lot. I knew all of this had to do with Angel Elisha. She had manipulated the situation, putting thoughts into Mum's head. I could see the plot unfolding and I had no doubts in my mind that it would all come about. It made me feel good to know that my mum was listening to her angels. The anticipation was almost too much to bear, knowing what the outcome of the shopping trip with Mum in Dublin would be. That Thursday we went into the city by bus. It was quite busy, with all the usual hustle and bustle. Mum and I visited many department stores along O'Connell Street, Henry Street and Mary Street, and we browsed through many beautiful things. Mum always loved looking at the china section, so I managed to escape for a while, pretending to look at other things. Then I heard Elisha say, "Look at your mum, Lorna." I looked down along the aisle to where Mum was standing, looking at china. I saw two shining beings. One was Mum's guardian angel, but the biggest surprise was to see my spirit brother, Christopher. It was so long since I had seen my spirit brother and many years. I was thrilled to see him. I wanted to run down and take his hand like we did when I was a child in old Kilmainham, but my guardian angel held my feet fast to the ground. He does that when he knows I am overwhelmed and he doesn't want me to move. Christopher turned to me and smiled, then he turned back to my mother and started to whisper in her ear. Now I knew how my mother was able to hear the angels. It was because Christopher was acting as an intermediary. "Angel Elisha," I said, "I would love to tell Mum that Christopher is standing there with her."
"You can't, Lorna," she replied.
"But he is so magnificent, so beautiful," I said, pleading with her. Just then, light engulfed my spirit brother, Christopher. He was enveloped in a light emanating from my mother's guardian angel. It touched me very deeply. It was one of the most magnificent sights I had ever seen. Mum turned around and called me, and as I walked towards her, the light around her became brighter and brighter. Then the angels disappeared, but I knew they were still there. "Let's go and have lunch over in our Knott's department store," Mum said. We went in and, as usual, there was a big queue in the restaurant. We got our lunch and found a table to sit down. Mum talked about all the lovely things she had seen. She had bought some spoons and a plate that had a little flaw. While we were having lunch, Mum said, "We will get the 2 o'clock bus home. We will have just enough time to go to one more department store on Mary Street." As soon as we were finished lunch, we walked down to Mary Street. As I pushed open the doors, Angel Elisha was standing just inside. The whole place felt vibrant to me. I could feel the energy. Something good was going to happen for me, and there would also be a surprise for my mum. Mum had turned to go to the knitwear counter when a man approached her. He was small and skinny and was wearing a suit. Mum didn't seem to recognize him, but he had recognized her and called her by her name. He introduced himself and there was a look of surprise on my mum's face. "Surely," he said to her, "you must remember me. I lived a few doors up the road from you. We even went out together on a few occasions." All of a sudden Mum's face lit up as she recognized him. They talked and laughed. Mum seemed to forget all about me standing there beside her. Then the man asked Mum, "Who is this young lady with you, Rose? Is this your daughter?"
"Yes," my mum replied, "this is Lorna."
Just then my spirit brother, Christopher, whispered in Mum's ear and, without hesitation, these words came out of Mum's mouth. "Lorna is looking for work. She's been working with her DA for the last 2 years and could do with a change." The man turned to me and said, "Lorna, see where the stairs are? Go up the stairs to reception and ask for an application form. Fill it in and take it to the office. Ask to speak to Phyllis." I did as he said. I knocked on the office door and asked to speak to Phyllis. I was feeling nervous and asked the angels to stay close to me. The lady in the office asked to see my application form. She told me the manager was not in the office and sent me back down the stairs to find her. She told me to turn left, go down the little corridor, and then she said I'd see a door on the left. I thanked her and went back down the stairs, took a left turn down a little corridor and knocked on the office door, which was slightly ajar. I called out, "Hello. Come in. The door is open," a woman's voice replied. I opened the door fully and looked into the office. It was quite dark, and inside, sitting at a desk, was a small, middle-aged lady. I noticed you could see right across the shop floor because the front of the office was made of glass. Angel Elisha was standing though with the lady, so that made me feel more at ease. The lady introduced herself and said she was the manager of the store. "What can I do for you?" she asked.
I told her that the manager on the shop floor had sent me up to see her. She asked to look at my application form and asked if I had ever worked for anyone other than my DA. No, this would be my first job outside of the garage, I replied. She told me that I was lucky, there were a few vacancies and I could start the following Monday. She told me to come straight to her office at 9 o'clock on Monday morning and if she was not there, she would be on the shop floor. She would show me to the department I was to work in and have one of the girls show me the ropes. We shook hands and I said goodbye. I was so delighted I nearly danced down the stairs. A new job and in a fashion store, I was thrilled. I was singing praise and thanks to all my angels. When I got back to where Mum was, I found her still in conversation with her friend. I noticed then that he looked a lot older than my Mum. He turned to me and asked how I got on with Phyllis. I start work on Monday, I replied. Great, he said. He and Mum spoke for another couple of minutes and then he said he had to go. I met Joe the next evening and told him about my new job. He was delighted for me, even though he said he would miss seeing me at work every day. He told me absence makes the heart grow fonder and he agreed that not working for DA would make me a lot more independent. Joe and I were so close by now that working in the same place or not made little difference. We were spending an awful lot of time together, but we were still keeping it secret from everyone. On Monday morning I walked into the store. It looked so empty, although there were a lot of staff on the floor. The store manager was there, so I walked up to her. She told me to follow her down to the cloakrooms, which I did, even though I was extremely nervous and afraid. This was my first job away from family, completely on my own. She introduced me to Francis, who was in charge of one of the ladies' fashion sections, a skirt say, and I was to be her new assistant. I was very apprehensive that first day, and I was particularly concerned about the lunch break, but I needn't have worried. A girl called Pauline, who was much the same age as me and worked in the same department, came over to me during the morning and told me that we were both on the same lunch break and invited me to join her. She showed me the ropes and we became good friends. From the beginning I very much enjoyed working there. I liked dealing with people and I loved the atmosphere of the shop. The management was decent, and quite caring. I was in my element working in the fashion department. I soon learned everything there was to know about skirts and, sometimes, when the skirt department was not too busy, I would help out in other ladies' sections. Chapter 9. The Angel of Death. After only a few weeks in my new job, the angels brought my attention to a young man called Mark, who worked in the handbag department. He was tall and thin with brown wavy hair and brown eyes and he always seemed to wear a brown suit. At times, when I looked over at him, I would see a soft subtle light around him. One afternoon, when the shop was quiet, I stood watching Mark from across the floor and I saw an angel appear behind him. This was not a guardian angel I was seeing, as the vibrancy and light surrounding him was completely different to that of a guardian angel. This angel was elegant, slender and extremely tall. I knew there was something very different about what I was seeing. The angel turned and looked at me with compassion on his face. Then he stood behind Mark and leaned forward over the young man's shoulders and reached into his body and touched his soul. I saw him lift Mark's soul very gently, like a newborn baby, and rock it forward and backwards through his body with gentleness and compassion. The young man seemed to stand there, very still, as if in a trance, and totally unaware of what was going on. I started to cry, but I didn't know why. I was full of emotion, but I didn't know what it was about. I felt a tap on my shoulder. It was Angel Hosus. I turned and looked at him. He put his hands up to my face to wipe away the tears that were filling my eyes and he told me to find an excuse to go to the storeroom and he would meet me there. I looked around to see where the manager was. To my relief, he was standing at the back entrance of the store, talking to a security guard. I told him I was going to the stockroom. I went into the storerooms through the two heavy doors which, when pushed, swung open and then closed behind you as you walked through. The rooms were packed with boxes everywhere. I made my way through them, then went up the big stone spiral staircase. The fashion department storeroom was 3 flights up on the top floor. I ran up the stairs as fast as I could and pushed a small door open. The room was poorly lit and was full of rails and boxes of clothes. I looked down along the rails, they were as high as the ceilings, but I couldn't see Hosus. Knowing no one else was there, I called out his name. I walked down the last aisle of rails and there he was, sitting on a box in the corner, waiting formed. My heart lifted when I saw him. Angel Hosus, I said as I sat down, I need to know about the angel I saw. What is going to happen to the young man? Hosus reached out and took my hand. I can only tell you a little. The angel you saw was different. He is the angel of death. This angel does not appear unless someone is going to die in extraordinary circumstances. The angel of death does everything in his power to try and prevent it from happening, and he has many angels working with him. You can be sure, for instance, that when an agency is planning an atrocity that will destroy innocent life, the angel of death will have been trying for a long time to convince the people involved that God does not want this to happen. There should not be war, but peace, and only peace. The angel of death works everywhere, even amongst the very highest level of government, to prevent the taking of innocent life, especially in times of war. The angel of death works extremely hard trying to convince people, but do they listen to the angels? Sometimes, maybe, but not always. Before this, if I had thought of an angel called the angel of death, I would have envisioned an angel carrying nothing but disaster, pain and anguish, yet this angel was full of love and compassion. I thanked Hosus and went back to work. I had learnt when not to ask more. We are all brought up to fear the angel of death, but the angel of death is for life. The angel of death is a good angel, who fights on behalf of the living and for what is right and good. From that point onwards I became much more aware of Mark. Every time I looked at him I also saw the angel of death. I know he had a guardian angel with him, too, but I was never shown it. Every day my attention was being drawn to him, it was as if I was watching over him, trying to intercede for him so that maybe, somehow, things would change and the angels would be listened to. Normally, 2 other girls worked with Mark in the handbag department. However, one day, to my surprise, I discovered he was aware of me watching him. Sometime later he came to my department and asked the floor manager if he could borrow me for a while, to work on the handbag counter. I knew this was not Mark's doing, but that of the angels. They had whispered in Mark's ear and had been listened to. This was done so that Mark and I could spend some time together. As the months passed, my heart was really heavy. I learned more about him from the other girls. He had a girlfriend in Northern Ireland and he travelled by bus and train to visit her every weekend. I kept hoping that everything would be okay, but my angels were still asking me to help him, so in my heart and soul I knew he was not safe. The shop was always very busy, especially at the weekends, and several times a year there were sales. These sales were always packed, mostly with women, and some of them would bring young children and babies in prams. During the sales the staff spent most of their day picking up clothes from the floor, where they had been dropped by women in their frantic efforts to find bargains. It was difficult to keep the clothes off the floor. It was chaotic and there was a constant queue at the cash register, but I quite enjoyed the sales, because I was always busy and the day passed very quickly. I also liked helping people. One particular Saturday during a sale, I was squeezing in between customers, trying to hang skirts back on the rails, when I felt a pull on my uniform. I looked down and to my amazement, saw 2 little angels. They were childlike in appearance, about 2 feet tall with wings. They were bathed in a beautiful bright light and joy poured from them, they were so bubbly they sparkled. I had seen angels like this before, and every time I see them they make me feel like a child myself. These little angels touch the child within me, they fill me with joy, happiness and laughter. As I looked down, one of the little angels said, "Come quickly, Lorna. You must follow us." They guided me through the crowd to the other end of the fashion department. The little angels disappeared into the crowd, but I could still hear them calling to me.